I'm John Krall. The Indiana Family and Social Services Administration has a difficult job, that of helping the most vulnerable among us, the young, the old, and the poor. FSSA has struggled to meet this challenge in a time of budget challenges and growing need. It has responded with approaches, child care ratings, and a new hybrid welfare system among them, that are innovative and at times controversial. We will talk today about the changes and challenges confronting FSSA with our guests, FSSA Communication Director Neil Moore, Deputy Director of the Division of Family Resources Adrena Shields, and Bureau of Child Care Director Melanie Brizzi. Please join the conversation by calling 1-866-476-3881, emailing nolimits at WFYI.org, or sending a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, the day's news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, Director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism and Executive Editor of thestatehousefile.com. We are talking today about the challenges confronting social service providers here in the state of Indiana. We are fortunate to have as our guests Adrena Shields, who is the Deputy Director of the Division of Family Resources at FSSA. Adrena, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me here today.
Good to have you here. Melanie Brizzi, who is the Bureau of Child Care Director. Melanie, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's good to have you here. And Neil Moore, also with FSSA, who is the Communication Director. Neil?
Good to be with you, John.
It's good to have you here. Well, I want to invite our audience to join this conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits at WFYI.org. You can send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I want to start a little bit by talking about what FSSA's charge is, what the range of responsibilities are here. I'll start with you, Adrena Shields.
Well, thank you, and good afternoon. FSSA is one of the state's largest state agencies. Today, specifically, we're here to talk about the Division of Family Resources. The Division of Family Resources is responsible for numerous programs. Under the Division of Family Resources, we have the Bureau of Child Care. We also have the Head Start program. We have the Indiana Commission for the Social Status of Black Males. The Division of Family Resources is also responsible for establishing Medicaid eligibility, Hoosier HealthWise eligibility, establishing eligibility for food stamps, as well as the temporary assistance for needy families. So we're a social services agency supporting Indiana's most vulnerable Hoosiers in a time of need.
How many people are part of SSA? Both as employees and then how many do you serve on a typical basis?
The Division of Family Resources, just in our public assistance programs, we're serving over 1.1 million Hoosiers, and that's under Medicaid, TANF, food stamps, Hoosier HealthWise, and the Healthy Indiana Plan.
And 1.1 million people, how large is the staff serving all of those folks?
For the Division of Family Resources, we have over 3,000 staff supporting the state of Indiana.
Okay, so not a small agency at all.
Not a small agency nor a small task in front of us.
Okay, well then let's talk about a little bit, Melanie Brizzi, about what the Bureau of Child Care does, what your responsibilities are as part of that massive operation.
Absolutely. The Bureau of Child Care plays an important role in assisting families in reaching economic self-sufficiency. We have a twofold task, and the first of that is administering the child care voucher, which is assistance for low-income families while they are working or going to school to pay for child care, making that child care accessible and affordable so that they can get to work and earn income. The second piece of that is really for all Hoosier children, and our goal is to improve the quality of child care for any child in the state.
And how many, basically, people, clients do you serve?
We have about 35,000 children a month that are receiving the voucher. We also touch families, many other families who aren't receiving the voucher but are utilizing child care services.
And Neil Moore, I'm going to ask you sort of a more overarching question. Mm-hmm. What is the biggest misconception out there right now? As communication director, part of your job is to get the message out about FSSA. What's the biggest misconception about the agency?
I think probably that it's a nameless and faceless monolith that people don't know much about, don't understand, and therefore presume that since it's government, it must be slow, it must not be very attentive to the public's needs. They don't hear the voice of the public and that sort of thing. And that's just simply not the case. I know I've been there about 6 months or so, and in the time I've been there, it's just remarkable to see the degree of commitment that people have to helping people here in the state of Indiana. It can get tedious at times with regard to money and programming and bureaucracy and all those kinds of things. But my sense is that most, if not all, of our employees really never lose sight of the fact that people are in need, and now more so than ever because of the economy that we've been through, and they understand that. And that's the thing I would hope people would understand a little bit better about the agency.
Well, and how much of that is a product of the fact, obviously, in recent years, FSA, I know I'm going to
I say it all
I'm
the time.
Screw that up at some point, and I got it out of the way early. Yeah. FSSA, I added an extra S there, but that's all right. Has had some rocky moments over the past few years. I mean, obviously, there was an attempt with, we're looking at litigation, obviously, right now with IBM and all of that. How much of that has clouded the perceptions, people's perceptions of what the agency does?
Well, I don't think there's any question that certainly it has had some impact. I don't know how much the so-called man on the street, woman on the street, necessarily pays a lot of attention to that. But at a higher level, certainly people are aware of the circumstance with IBM. We really can't talk much about that because it is litigation that's pending. But it's something that has been there for us. But we've moved past that, and we've really undertaken with this hybrid enrollment system that we're going to talk about here in a bit, really was a response to that and saying, let's do better and let's go out and create this system that's more responsive and does a better job of serving Hoosiers. And that's what's happened.
We are talking about the challenges confronting social service providers here on No Limits today. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Melanie, I'm going to talk about, I'd like to talk a little bit about something Neil alluded to there, that in this time of budget challenges and the constraints of money and economic downturn, how has that affected what you have to do, the services you have to provide? We're going to get to the more specific, the child care ratings, the hybrid system here pretty soon. But I want to give people an overarching picture here because it strikes me that one of the tremendous challenges that you face is that at a time when the resources to provide services are constrained by dwindling revenues, the need for them escalates and often just explodes. Could you talk a little bit about what that's done to the way that you provide services?
Absolutely. And the Bureau of Child Care has experienced that as well. The need for child care vouchers is higher than it's ever been. We've responded by making sure that we are efficiently administering those dollars and that we're serving children just as quickly as we can. And so we've implemented a lot of efficiencies within our system to do so. Lots of communication with families, making sure that they have everything that they need to find child care that meets their family's needs, and high quality child care that also prepares their children for school and just an overall success of the family.
Talk to me a little bit about those vouchers. I mean, if people are listening right now and, they want to try to get a voucher for child care, how do they go about that process? Who qualifies? Who doesn't? And I'm presuming it's not just, I can't suddenly say, oh, I'm going to be a child care provider because I want access to those vouchers, that there's got to be a system on the other end that there are only providers that you're willing to work with too.
Certainly. From a family's perspective, in order to be eligible, you need to make within the income guidelines and you need to be either employed or attending school. So there's a service need eligibility component and an income component.
And what are the income parameters?
You have to be under 127% of the federal poverty level. If you want to get online on our website, you can actually look up the number of family members and what that would mean for a gross income. That's all posted online so families can get an idea, am I eligible for this or not?
But to give people kind of a rough idea, if it's a family of four, what annual income would we be looking at?
Generally,
ballpark.
Yeah, like ballpark. Gross monthly, if I'm a mom with two children, it's about $1,300. But I do encourage people to always check with us and see, because there are some circumstances that go into what is countable, what is not. So please check with us before you assume that you're not eligible.
So if you're a single parent with two children, we're talking about somewhere between $15,000 and $16,000 a year?
Yes.
Gross income, not net. So, yeah. So to qualify for the voucher, you've got to be pretty far down on the economic. Now, in terms of being a child care provider, what standards do you have to meet?
There are standards before you can accept the child care voucher. You need to either be a licensed provider, meaning a licensed center or a licensed family home. And if you're not licensed, then you have to show that you meet provider eligibility standards, which are minimum qualifications for health and safety, such as first aid and CPR, hot and cold, running water, working telephone, those basic health and safety standards.
Mm-hmm. And I should say, you mentioned that they should go to the website to check things out. Mm-hmm. It would be helpful if we actually told them the URL for the website.
Yes.
Here, which
absolutely.
Is...
Absolutely. If you're a family and you'd like some more information about CCDF, you can visit www.childcarefinder.in.gov. And if you're a family looking for child care, I recommend that you go to www.childcareindiana.org. And there is a free child care search available that can give you information on those providers that meet your needs in your area, the hours that you need care, the type of care that you're looking for. There's a lot of resources available for families.
And Adrena Shields, I'd like to talk with you a little bit, too, about how the economic slowdown has affected, you know, what you have to do. Can you give us a broad picture, and then we're going to drill down?
Absolutely. The Division of Family Resources is responsible for establishing eligibility for our public assistance benefits, and that would include TANF, which is Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, food stamps, what we also call SNAP, and Medicaid. And because of our current economy, we have seen our caseloads increase dramatically.
How much? By
right now,
proportion?
We're at 1.1 million Hoosiers, and that's an over 30% increase specifically for, like, our food stamp program. We have seen a 30% increase in applications.
Since what time? Since
2008? Over the past year.
Oh.
The month of August was the highest number of applications we had ever seen in the state of Indiana in one particular month, August of 2010.
Boy, that is fascinating, because to some degree you see the Dow climbing at 12.7, 12.8, and in most places at least the unemployment numbers have stayed static or even dropped a little bit, but you're seeing a 30% increase since in the past, what is that about?
In the past year.
7 months or so, if we're talking August.
Right, in one particular month that was the highest number of applications we had seen. And our food stamp beneficiaries have increased by 30%.
And, I mean, how do you deal with that? I mean, I'm presuming it's not like you have an increased pot to hand these, you know, to provide aid for these people. How do you provide for those needs if you've got that kind of, and I guess I'm going to ask an even more basic question. How do you budget?
Well, part of our funding is from the federal government. Mm-hmm. The federal government assists us with ensuring that we're establishing benefits for those individuals that actually qualify. We cannot turn away an individual that meets the qualifications for food stamps. If they meet the qualifications for Medicaid, they are eligible for those programs.
So basically, it's a demand-driven system then,
that
entirely.
That is correct.
And in that sense, it makes it almost impossible for you to control the budget, right?
That's correct. There is no budget. If an individual arrives and they're eligible for food stamps or Medicaid or TANF, we authorize those benefits.
We are talking about the challenges confronting social service providers here with our guests, Neil Moore, Melanie Brizzi, and Adrena Shields of FSSA. I slowed down to get it right there. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org, or you can send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism and executive editor of thestatehousefile.com. We are talking today about the challenges confronting social service providers and, frankly, social service recipients here in the state. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We're talking with three people from FSSA. Communication Director Neil Moore, Deputy Director of the Division of Family Resources, Adrena Shields, and Bureau of Child Care Director Melanie Brizzi. Adrena, I'm going to stay with you right now. Talk to me about the new hybrid system. It's one of those things people are talking about, but right now very few people seem to understand. So walk me through what it is and then how people access it. But let's start with, what is it? What makes it different?
Right. What is the hybrid? The hybrid has actually not rolled out to Marion County yet. We are rolling out this new model on Monday, February 20th. That is not a state holiday, so our state offices are open. What the hybrid model is a way for our recipients to access public benefits. Individuals will be able to go online and apply for Medicaid, food stamps, or TANF. Typically, they have been asked to come to a local office or apply by mail. So now they have the option of applying online. Individuals will have access to a toll-free 1-800 number to check the status of their benefits. Individuals now will no longer have one individual caseworker managing their case. We have moved to what we call a team approach for case management. In the previous model, when one caseworker had a case and they were off sick or on vacation, that case would sit. Now, anytime they walk into a local office, any person in that office can assist them. I mentioned our phone systems. They will call an 800 number. It will be routed to an individual that can assist them. It does not go to one particular individual. Calls are answered between the business hours of 8 and 4:30. And we have electronic files. All of our files are now within our computer systems and are electronic. We no longer have paper files.
Okay, a couple of questions here. One, how many people will be affected by this in Marion County?
We have about 20,000 individuals receiving services in Marion County.
Okay, so we got 20,000 people in Marion County. What drove these changes? Where were the breakdowns in the old system that prompted you to move to this one?
Well, we had to look at our caseloads. Our caseloads were continuing to increase. We had to also look at our client experience. We want individuals to have a positive experience when they come to our local offices. We also wanted to increase accessibility and accountability. We need to make sure that our caseworkers are processing cases timely, accurately. And we also need to make sure that we're processing timely. So we had to look at our entire system and make sure that we're supporting the Indiana Hoosiers.
We're talking about social service challenges here in Indiana. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Adrena, I want to ask another question, too. Presuming, you say the office is open from 8 to 4:30, they can call during then. If you're working during that time or you have other challenges, how do they access the information they need outside of business hours? Is that online?
Individuals have two options outside of our business hours. They can access and manage their benefits online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from a home computer, a library computer, a work computer. Individuals can also call our 1-800 number, and that number is 1-800-403-0864. And
can you repeat that real quickly?
That number again.
Most people are not going to grab a pencil when you start that. So people, I'm talking to you right now. You've got a second. Grab the pencil now. Go. Adrena.
The toll-free number for applying for benefits, managing your benefits, is 1-800-403-0864. Individuals can access that line 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to manage their benefits as well.
Do you worry a little bit, because one of the terms we talk about, in this country is the digital divide. And, you know, it is something that's driven to some degree by age and all of that, but also by class and, economic status. is saying you can access this online, is that necessarily going to reach the people you're trying to serve?
And that's why we went back and revised our hybrid model from the model that we had in 2009. We wanted to make sure that we were supporting the elderly and the disabled who often do not have access to a computer or a phone that many individuals have now, or they can go online on their phone. So our office hours are 8 to 4:30, and we encourage the elderly and disabled to come into the local offices and receive the support and face-to-face connection that they may need.
Neil Moore, I'm going to ask real quickly, if you want to get kind of an overview of FSSA services real quickly, including information about the hybrid system, where should they go? What's the URL?
The main URL is fssa.in.gov, and we have divisions that include, we really kind of just scratched the surface on what we have, because in addition to what we talked about already, we have the Department of the Mental Health area, which, of course, has lots to do with our state hospitals, et cetera. Then we have the Division of Aging, the nursing home issues that they deal with, and then also we have the disabilities area as well. So in addition to the resources we've talked about here, we have these others. I mentioned that to say that when you go to that main website page, on the left-hand side of the navigation, you'll see the listing of all of our divisions. Simply click on that, and in the case of what we're talking about here, just go to Family Resources, which will be in that listing, and it'll take you there. And then within Family Resources, there's another link in there that says child care.
And I presume it's searchable, too.
You can absolutely. Punch it. Yeah. Sure, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We are talking about social service challenges here in Indiana. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Aaron, welcome to the program.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm great, thanks.
That's good. Your question, please?
Yeah, I would like to know if part of the changes in the new hybrid model of providing benefits such as Medicaid and food stamps is going to include hiring more bilingual Spanish-speaking staff to assist families and parents who speak Spanish.
Good question. Thank you very much for the call, Aaron.
Thank you.
Well, I will leave that one with Adrena. Are we hiring more Spanish-speaking bilingual
people in FSA? We definitely want to reach out to individuals that are bilingual to support our non-English-speaking clients here in the state of Indiana. You can always check the Indiana website for employment information. We will be looking for additional employees to support the hybrid model here in Marion County.
We've gotten a tweet from a listener who says, it seems like there is a large lack of oversight within the current DFR system. DFR refers to?
Division of Family Resources.
Okay. In my line of work, I see so much misuse and abuse. Also, why are there so many children whose fathers provide health care coverage and yet they receive HHW? Who would like to take that one?
This is Adrena Shields, and I'll take that question.
Adrena Shields, all right, all yours.
Thank you for sending in the question. HHW stands for Hoosier HealthWise. And when you're applying for Hoosier HealthWise, we look at the household composition. We also look at the income. And we base our eligibility determination upon the information that we receive from that client. And we do provide, or we do actually have verification checks. So if there is a child that is receiving, or a family that's receiving child support and that's not reported, that is something that we would look into to verify that we're receiving accurate information.
Well, and I'm going to broaden this just a little bit, and I'll bring Melanie Brizzi in. Obviously, there's clearly a very strong screening system in terms of the vouchers for child care and all of that. What's the follow-up? I mean, it's not like people's lives stay static. What happens if they move above the income level? Or, you know, frankly, on the other end of it, if a child care provider's standards for maintaining, their service or their site slip, what's the process for checking back on that and holding them accountable, not just at the beginning of the process, but throughout it?
For families that are on the CCDF program, they are required to recertify with us at least every 6 months. This gives us the opportunity to make sure that their employment status hasn't changed, that they're still income eligible, and that happens at least every 6 months, depending on a family's circumstances. For child care providers, they have at least once a year an on-site visit to ensure that safety standards are being followed, as well as other visits in between. We offer lots of technical assistance to providers to make sure they're maintaining those high standards of care. And so there's quite a bit of compliance on the side of the providers to make sure they're meeting the standards.
And I just have to ask this of all of you. Do you ever get lost in the acronyms here? frankly, keeping track of all of those things. We are talking about social service challenges here in Indiana. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Ed, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Your question, please.
Well, I've got a daughter who is disabled, mentally disabled, and she's receiving benefits through the program. And I've helped many times to get her into the program and to keep things up to date within the program. My challenge is that I find the process oftentimes cumbersome to the point that someone with a mental disability can't do it themselves, that they always need someone to help them. And I'm just wondering what can be done, if anything, to make it easier for those individuals to get the services while keeping those who can sort of outsmart the system from getting into the system.
Good question. Thank you very much for the call, Ed. Well, that is a tough question. I mean, obviously, those are the folks who need the services the most, but there's sort of a, by definition, challenge of accessing them. Adriana Shields, what is the solution there?
Absolutely. And what we encourage, there are numerous individuals in our communities that have mental challenges as well as developmental challenges. And we encourage family members, if they have family members or advocates, to become an authorized representative for that individual. And an authorized representative is a person that can advocate for them, that can work with the Division of Family Resources to establish eligibility, to make sure we have the most current and accurate information, and they can support that individual. So we have what we call an authorized representative that can advocate for that person in establishing eligibility.
Well, let me, I've got a cousin, lives not here in Indiana, but in another state. And I think this sort of speaks to the real fear behind Ed's question. He can obviously access this system now because he's there to serve as his daughter's advocate. But my cousin has a sister, actually it's a stepsister, who has serious developmental issues. And they're both, like me, of a mature vintage. And he worries about, you know, the parents are gone. He's really the only person with a family connection still to his stepsister. What happens to her and her care when he's not there? That's not an isolated circumstance. We see that an awful lot with these children. Is there a solution for that? Someone who will step in, a state representative who serves as that person's advocate? And if so, how do you go about making that transition?
Right. And that is a common situation here in the state of Indiana as well, where you have an individual with a mental disability or a developmental disability that has very limited family supports. There are advocacy agencies like Child Protective Services, Adult Protective Services, that will assist those individuals that don't have family members, such as the ARC of Indiana for individuals with developmental disabilities. We also have what we call here in the state of Indiana enrollment centers. Mm-hmm. There are your local community agencies that assist individuals in applying for state benefits.
And I want to, we diverted a little bit from the hybrid system. Real quickly, could you tell me, you know, as we talk about that, what you think the primary benefits for this new approach will be, where people will gain the most from this new system?
I think the clients of Indiana will gain the most in the accessibility of our new programs. They do not have to wait on one caseworker to return their call. They can call the 800 number and any one person will assist them. If they want to apply for benefits or access benefits online or via the phone, they can do that. These options, these avenues did not exist prior to Monday.
We are talking about the challenges confronting social service providers and recipients here in Indiana. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Bill, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello, Bill. Welcome to the program. Your question?
Hi. My question is, my experience with both long-term care and acute care, and these surveys are conducted by the Department of Health, but you had alluded to, your guest alluded earlier to inspections annually of child care providers. And I'm wondering, are those inspections announced in advance the way they are with acute and long-term care inspections?
We'll check on that. Bill, you're breaking up on us a little bit, so I'm going to take your question, and I think I will direct that to Melanie Brizzi. Are they announced? Are they unannounced? Do you do surprise inspections?
We do a combination of both, depending on the purpose of the visit. But we do have those unannounced visits, which I think are important. It's, you know, you always put your best face forward when you have an appointment scheduled. So we also are able to do some unannounced visits, which give us a little bit different information.
And who does those visits, either announced or unannounced? Do you have like an enforcement division or or whatever? And how are those folks trained?
Absolutely. We don't have an enforcement division. We have a licensing division, and it is a team of inspectors and consultants that work with the Bureau, and they have extensive training in lots of different topics, ranging from child development to health and safety to environmental safety. We have certain individuals that specialize if there are issues that need some special treatment. We have those folks on staff, too, and they go out and conduct these visits for us.
Well, and I'd like to use this use Bill's question kind of as a chance to talk about the child care rating system, to make the transition here. Just introduce that. Could you talk a little bit about what that is, and what the criteria involved are? And we'll begin talking about that. Melanie Brizzi, please.
Thank you. Indiana's quality rating system for child care is called Paths to Quality. And the reason why a rating system is so essential for child care is that the licensing regulations vary greatly among the different provider types. So as a family, you can't always tell just by looking or interviewing a provider what type of care that they are providing, what type of education that they have, what their learning philosophy is. So it's important to get some additional information, but it's also difficult to make this child care search. So what a quality rating system does is make that a little bit simpler for families, in that it gives an easily recognizable symbol for different levels of care, the different levels of quality. Our system is a four-level system. It starts with the foundation of licensing, so the basic health and safety standards, and it's a step-stair approach to level four, which is the highest level, which includes national accreditation. So at that level, you have a curriculum that aligns with the Indiana Department of Education's early learning guidelines, and learning activities, pre-literacy activities, really all the key components to making sure that children are ready to start school.
And if real quickly, just very quickly, where to access the information about this rating system, where do people go? If you're looking up your child care provider, where do you go? What site?
There are two different places that I would like for you to look. The first one is on the IN.gov website. There you can see the inspection reports for the past 3 years for every regulated child care provider. This will give you an idea if there's been serious health and safety violations occurring at the facility. The second place where I'd like for you to look is the childcareindiana.org website. That will give you information about Paths to Quality and those higher quality initiatives.
We are talking about social service challenges here in the state of Indiana on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. We're going to continue discussing this with our guests, Neil Moore, Adrena Shields, and Melanie Brizzi. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism and executive editor of thestatehousefile.com. We're talking today about social service challenges here in Indiana with our guests, communication director for the FSSA, Neil Moore. You guys have to change that acronym. If you come back, that's going to be one of my conditions. Adrena Shields, who is the deputy director of the Division of Family Resources, and Bureau of Child Care Director Melanie Brizzi. We've gotten a lot of email questions, so I'm going to try to whip through them real quickly. And if you would like to send a question or call into the program, the number to call in is 1-866-476-3881. You can send your email question to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. This one comes from a listener named Sybil, who says, "Thank you for this program. My EBT card has not scanned properly for several years now. Is there a length of time in which the card can be replaced at no charge to me?" I will start with Adrena Shields.
EBT stands for Electronic Benefits Transfer, another acronym in FSSA.
Okay. We're going to work our way through the alphabet here.
That's correct. Yes, we will. All right. We're on E's. Electronic Benefits Transfer, individuals have cards if they're a food stamp recipient or a TANF recipient. Individuals are entitled to one free card per year. So we encourage clients, if your card is not scanning, please call the number on the card, the 800 number, and you can request a replacement card.
And it says here in her email that it hasn't scanned properly for several years, so she fits the guidelines.
Yes, then. She does.
And it, actually, what is the 800 number, just to make it easy?
I do not know the 800 number off the top of my head, but the 800 number is on the EBT cards.
Okay, that will work. This is from a listener named Colleen. I said, "I assume that these taxpayer benefits are available to U.S. citizens. Citizens should be able to speak English. Why should bilingual be an issue?" I'll toss that one to Melanie Brizzi. Why is bilingual service access important?
Well, citizenship is a requirement for the child to be a recipient of CCDF, but we have a lot of bilingual citizens who need access to high-quality child care. And so to be there as a support for that family helps that child with future success, success in school, success in college. So it really is a win-win situation for everyone.
And this is a somewhat long and a little more involved question. I don't have a name for the listener, so I'm just going to move ahead. It says, "A partner in my group has two patients whose father is an OBGYN, more acronyms, and the children recently had their insurance changed to Medicaid. The father is still practicing, as is evidenced by the fact that I've seen newborns he delivered in the past few weeks. This OBGYN is married and lives with his wife, and they are biological parents of the two healthy children covered by Indiana Medicaid. This is not SSI disability. This is not CHIP either. The father works full-time and has been an OBGYN in this area for 16 years. He had private insurance without Medicaid, but as of 2012 only has Medicaid. I'm not sure how someone in that circumstance can qualify for Medicaid." And he also is saying, and I think this is at the heart of it, "I'm also not sure what to do about this, and neither are the other pediatricians in the group. Any ideas or thoughts?"
Yes, I would wonder if the children are adopted. If they're adopted children, then they are eligible for Medicaid. If they're his biological children, then I would wonder, have the individual that applied for those kids, did they not supply accurate information? If you ever have questions regarding fraud, any person in the state of Indiana can report fraud at the 800 number that was previously given. And that number, again, is 1-800-403-0864. And any person in the state of Indiana can report fraud and remain anonymous.
Neil Moore, I'm gonna take this in a communication direction here, which is, instances like this are probably, if this, you know, again, and I'm not casting aspersions on anyone. When I say, as an old journalist, you want to verify everything. So in this case, if this circumstance is in fact an accurate depiction of what's going on, and probably you got somebody who's qualifying for benefits who receiving benefits who should not qualify for them, how much damage does that do to that misperception issue, or that perception issue that that you alluded to at the beginning of the program.
Yeah, certainly. I think that has a lot to do with it. I mean, after all, people who are working and paying taxes, understanding that some of their tax dollars are going into these kinds of programs, if they see something, and it's particularly if it's a verified circumstance, that can be alarming, to be sure. And to your question of how much damage does it do, I don't have a specific measurement, but I would presume it's certainly something that doesn't help by any stretch of the imagination. I would add, too, that we do have an entire division devoted to seeking out fraud circumstances in Medicaid programming, it's staffed by, I'm not sure how many people, Adrena, but it's a fairly significant number of folks.
How widespread a problem is this? I mean, that it's obviously the focus of probably 90% of the public anger mm-hmm. about it, but how many of these instances do we see, really, Adrena?
We do have a specific division focused on fraud. We have a benefit recovery group. We also have a Bureau of Investigations. As far as the number of actual instances of fraud, it's very small compared to the number of dollars that we actually expend here in Indiana.
Like, define very small. I mean, are we talking?
I don't have an exact number on fraud because we would be investigating fraud for each of the public benefit programs. That would be Medicaid, TANF, and food stamps.
Okay, so you can bring... But when we say very small, are we talking less than 1%?
Would say it's less than 3 to 4% for each of those programs, yes.
Okay. We've gotten an email question from a listener named Mike who says, hi, I'm sorry I'm late listening to the show today. Well, we don't have an attendance policy, actually, Mike, but thank you. I appreciate the apology. I was wondering if you would address the separation of church and state as far as what religion plays and the monies. If enrolled in a parochial school, does the student have to be religious and be practicing? Melanie Brizzi, I will throw that one to you.
Well, I think that the question is a little bit maybe different when it deals with parochial elementary schools and high schools, but I will answer the question from a child care perspective. And in Indiana, faith-based organizations are exempt from licensing. If they meet the minimal qualifications for a child care development fund or CCDF voucher provider, if they meet the standards just as any other licensed exempt provider, they are eligible to receive a voucher payment. And the choice comes down to the family. The CCDF program is very supportive, as it should be, of parental choice in child care. So if a provider meets the standards, we don't ask what the faith-based affiliation is or if there's any faith-based affiliation or what their prayers are teaching. What we're looking for, do you meet the quality standards? And if you do, you're eligible to receive the voucher, and then the choice becomes up to the parent.
We are talking about social service challenges here in Indiana on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I want to talk a little bit more about the child care rating system, Melanie, and you talked about how it was a stair-step system where you move up. What make the differences between, if I'm looking at this and I say, okay, I see this one has a 1, this one has a 4, what accounts for the difference between the rating system?
Absolutely. At the first level, we are looking to make sure health and safety standards are met. Moving up to level 2 is when we start to look for an environment that promotes a child's learning, as well as business practices, contracts, those things that we just know make for a high quality, what research has shown us to be high quality child care, as far as the environment and setting. At level 3 is when providers start to implement a planned curriculum that aligns with the Indiana Department of Education's early learning guidelines, which is a really key point that child care is educational and that we need to make sure that we're addressing it as such. Anytime a child is in a location for 8 to 10 hours a day, 5 days a week, they're learning something. So are they learning what we wish for them to learn? What's going to make them successful in their future? Then at level 4, there's the national accreditation is the big marker of that. Now, at each level, the staff and teachers at the child care facility have to attain higher education, more clock hours of training. So there's incremental quality improvements across all of the levels, but those are the key markers that make the difference between the levels.
And this system, yeah, Neil Moore.
Well, I was just going to point out, too, that something else to remember about child care is the economic development perspective, because it is a significant factor with regard to how monies are used and what the sort of ultimate outcomes can be. I think we have some studies that indicate for every dollar that's expended in this particular arena, it comes back maybe 12 times in the ways that that is measured would be, for example, there's a reduction in having to do remediation with children as they get into the early years of elementary school. So in addition to the things that we traditionally associate with child care, I think it's all another important point to remember that it really does affect the bottom line as well, because it is the number one challenge that many working families have is to find quality child care.
Well, and particularly if you're talking about making sure that that two partners, basically both of whom can pursue productive careers or work or whatever, that would seem to be the essence. Now, this program, the child care rating system, it's not mandatory, right? It's voluntary?
It is a voluntary system.
And, you know, what are the levels of participation? How many of the child, and where can you go to check and see if your child care, one of the child care providers that you're looking at, participates in the system?
We have paths to quality providers in every county across the state. We have over 2,100 child care programs now voluntarily participating in paths to quality. That represents 86% of our licensed centers are enrolled voluntarily in paths to quality and 55% of our licensed homes. And that's a really important indicator. These are providers who are committed to continually improving their quality voluntarily. So if you want to find a PASDA quality provider, they are available. They're in every county. The best place to look is the childcareindiana.org website. You can search your county and get a list of child care providers that participate in PASDA quality, as well as what level they are currently on.
And can you just punch in the name of the child care provider itself and it'll pop up, or is it...
You can search the childcarefinder.in.gov alphabetically as well, and that shows the PASDA to quality level of each provider.
We are talking about the challenges confronting social service providers and recipients here on No Limits. Jackie, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Your question, please.
Hi. I have a question about accountability. I work with individuals who have disabilities, and they often have trouble with transportation, with access to computers, with communication. We've had a lot of situations where we've tried to call in to get answers or to complete verifications or just to keep benefits going. And we get menus and transfers to voicemails where nobody answers. And I would just like to hear some discussion about how the accountability might be able to be improved.
Good question. Thank you very much for the call, Jackie. Well, I'll start. Adrena, you haven't had a chance to talk for a couple of minutes. We'll start with you on that one. In terms of making sure, and that's not an uncommon frustration. You know, I know when we're talking about the hybrid system, for example, we're talking about how it's going to be available to people off hours and all of that. But there are times, frankly, you don't want a menu. You just want a human being on the other end, somebody who can walk you through the process. Are there steps in place to ensure that that's going to be the experience for more people who are confused or
Absolutely.
Need help? And what are those steps that are being taken?
I'm so glad Jackie asked the question. And that's part of the problem that we've had with our old system. And that's when a person would call, they'd go to a voicemail here in Indiana because the caseworker was actually working with an individual face-to-face and could not answer the call. So when people call the 1-800 number, they will get a live person Monday through Friday from 8 to 4:30. Calls are not being transferred to voicemail. They will be able to speak with the live caseworker who can assist them access information on their case. That was part of the problem we had previously, is that calls were going to voicemail, and it was taking days and days for an individual caseworker to return calls. Part of the hybrid model is fixing that exact problem.
And in this case, what are the system, what are reasonable expectations? If people call and say, okay, I've got this problem, is there a 50, 70, 90% chance that the question can be answered immediately on the phone, and or the problem can be solved? What's What is a reasonable expectation of being able to get your concern addressed?
Our expectation is that we are implementing a system where over 95% of those calls will be handled and answered and the issue resolved one time when they place that call.
So basically that's it. You should call and you should be able to get an answer. And the hybrid system, the rollout is when again?
The rollout for Marion County is on Monday, February 20th.
Starting at 8 a.m.?
Starting at 8 a.m.
So if I call that number at 8 a.m., we're ready to go then, and I will get an answer, right?
We are ready to go here in Marion County on February 20th.
Okay. We have been talking about the challenges confronting social service providers and social service recipients today on No Limits. I would like to thank my guests for this very informative program. Neil Moore, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, John, for having us in.
Certainly. Melanie Brizzi, it was a pleasure talking with you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, John.
And Adrena Shields, enjoyed talking with you. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having us here.
We will be back next week when we're going to talk about the somber subject of bullying, which causes both trauma and tragedy. We'll look forward to talking with you then. I am John Krall. You have been listening to No Limits. Talk to you in a week. Take care.
No Limits is a production of WFYI Public Radio, 90.1 FM and HD1. Producer, Sharon Alsip. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each Thursday at 1 p.m. for No Limits, rebroadcast at 8 p.m., and you can listen online at WFYI.org.